Good afternoon, everyone.
Good evening.
I heard a few of you, so some of y'all aren't here. Good afternoon, everyone.
Good afternoon.
Hey, that was everyone. Excellent. Before we get in, we're going to start Joshua this afternoon. Before we get into it, and I meant to mention this last week, we've been doing this for about 5 or 6 months now. That's about how long it took us to get through Genesis through Deuteronomy and the way that we're doing it. And if y'all are kind of, I know sometimes when you're on one thing for a while, sometimes you want to study something else, so for some reason y'all are all like, hey, we could study something else for a bit, let me know, and maybe we'll do something else. I'm totally cool to keep doing this, but I figured I would put that out there because sometimes it's good to mix it up and get a change of pace going and such. excuse me. And I don't know, I think Megan noticed last week, well, I know Megan and I talked about it last week, but at the end of the lesson, I was talking about the death of Moses. It surprised me, but I actually started to get choked up a little bit. And I got to thinking about it. I was like, why is that? Well, because I've been studying it so much and teaching it for so long, the 5 months dealing with this, and we were with Moses for several books there. I guess there was an aspect of it for me that finally just kind of came alive, and instead of looking at Moses as, some old Bible character and thus and such, I was finally able to view it, he was a real guy, and I mean, I know that, but you spend time with it, and it surprised me. I did not see it coming at all. When I was studying for it, I was like, okay, and last week I'm talking about it, and I just started to choke up. And I hope that this series is helping the Old Testament live a little bit better for y'all. I mean, I don't expect y'all to start bawling or choking up when I do up here, and I'm talking about something. But I hope it's helped you in the way that it has absolutely assisted me. So I just kind of wanted to share that. So we're going to be starting Joshua, doing chapters 1 through 5. But before we do that, as we always do when we begin a book, a few standard questions here. Genesis through Deuteronomy is known as what? Collectively. The law. It is known as the law. And even Jesus in the New Testament refers to it as the law. Genesis through Deuteronomy referred to as the law. How about Joshua through Esther? Good chunk of the Old Testament there.
History of the Jews.
History of the Jews. Yep, so we have the law, and then we have the history, and that's where we're going to start. We're going to start the history. Which obviously it's all history, but these titles kind of help us get a remembrance of what's going on in there. How about Job through Song of Solomon? Poetry, also known as wisdom literature. And yes, and Job is just one ridiculously long poem. How about Isaiah through Malachi? Prophecy. That is the fourfold way that we can break the Old Testament down. We have law, history, poetry, and prophecy. All right? So, second question, with Christ in mind, what is the threefold or a simple threefold breakdown of the Bible? So, we would have Old Testament, that being Genesis, all the way through Malachi. Christ will come. So, the Messiah, the Anointed One, will come. And then New Testament being Matthew through John there, the account of his life.
Christ is here,
or Christ has come. And then the rest of the New Testament being Acts through Revelation. He's coming again. Yep, so he is coming, he has come, or he is here, and then he's coming again. And I do realize that the first portion of Acts chapter 1, Christ is still there, and then he ascends, but just sort of for sake of ease, we break it up like that. So, and as always with this one, I don't necessarily remember y'all to remember the specifics, but we also keep repeating it, so hopefully you will. How much time passes in each book? So, about how much time passes in Genesis? little less than that, about 2,000. Just about 2,000. Just about 2,000 years. 1,000 of that being from Adam to Noah. So in the first just little bit of Genesis, you've got 1,000 years. Okay, so Genesis covers 2,000 years. About how many years does Exodus cover?
80.
About 81. Yep. About 81 years. Because Moses is 80 when he comes back, and it's within that, it's about a year from when he starts dealing with Pharaoh to when they are out into the wilderness there. All right, so Leviticus, about how much time passes in Leviticus?
1 month,
probably about a week. It really is probably about a week. Because if you remember, most of Leviticus is law, and then there's that midsection that covers a week. But it's definitely no more than a month. So we have 2,000 years, 81 years, probably about a week. And then, how about Numbers? A little over 38 years. Yep, about 38 years. And again, that's one that sometimes it's tough to remember because the wanderings are, even God refers to the wanderings as being 40 years, but he's counting the moment they left Egypt till the moment they entered the land. And in the beginning of Deuteronomy, he even says, you wandered specifically for 38 years. All right, and just covered it, Deuteronomy, about how much time passes in Deuteronomy. About 2 months. Yep, 2 months. And if you don't remember, I think it was last week that I said that I had made a slight boo-boo on that because Deuteronomy starts, I think it's the first day of the 11th month. Somehow I got it in my mind that that was the last month of their year, but it's not. They had 12 months in their year, and so it would have been 2 months. The speeches in Deuteronomy took place during a month, and then after that they mourned for a month. So you could 98% of Deuteronomy takes place in a month. And then there's that one little verse at the end that said they mourned for 30 days for the death of Moses. And then Joshua, as we're going to see, is going to take place, it's going to cover about 30 years. And the reason that we can't nail it down as an absolute is because in order to date it specifically, at least within Joshua, we need to know how old Joshua was at the beginning of it. And we don't know that. We're told how old he was when he died, but at all other points, we're not told specifically his age. We can get about a decent idea of it. Now, he was 110 when he died, and he was probably about the age of Caleb, probably near Caleb's age. And Caleb was 85 when the inheritance is given later on in Joshua. So you've got about a period of 30 years. Around about 30 years. Some say about 28, some say maybe 32. So I just cut it to the middle, go for 30. And now, of course, Joshua is going to begin with them preparing to enter into the land. And it has been about 470 years since God promised Abraham that his seed would take the land. It's rather in-depth to go and do that math and specifically figure that, but it's about 470 years. So they've been waiting 470 years to take the land. And so now it's time to do it. All right, so question four, and I'll just obviously, y'all aren't, give you these. You can break Joshua down to four parts pretty easily. First part we're going to see today is chapters 1 through 5, which is preparation and initial entrance. This is where they initially prepare to go over, and then where they actually go over. And that takes for the first five chapters of the book. The second part is chapter 6 through 12, and that chronicles the battles that take place in the land. Some of them, we have a lot of detail, and some of them is just passed over and says, this happened and they took this here. So that's 6 through 12. 13 through 22 is the receiving of the land or the giving out of the inheritance, where Joshua says, okay, thus and such tribe, And he tells them the border of their land and the cities involved, and here you go, now it's yours. That's 13 through 22. And then the last two chapters, 23 and 24, is words of remembrance. Joshua gives two speeches, very, very similar to some of the ones that Moses gave in Deuteronomy, to keep them in remembrance before he dies. So that's preparation and entrance, which is 1 through 5, battles in the land, which is 6 through 12, receiving or the giving out of the inheritance of the land, which is 13 through 22, words of remembrance, speeches of remembrance, something of that nature for 23 through 24. And before we start, I'll give the memory tool for Joshua at the outset, because what we're going to cover today won't expressly give us all the information we need to understand the memory tool. But the memory tool that I have come up with this one is the occupation and rest. The occupation and rest. Because they're finally going to go in and occupy the land, and God is going to give them rest in the land from their enemies around them. So the occupation and rest. And question six here. Joshua is about how old at the beginning of the book? At least 60. And here's why. At least 60, probably closer to 80. But what you have is, if you go back to Numbers 13, when the spies are chosen to go into the land, it says that the spies that were chosen were chiefs of their tribes. Well, he probably wasn't super young, and he was among those counted back in Numbers, in the beginning of Numbers, so he had to be above 20, and to be a chief in the tribe, he was probably more closer to about 40 or so, which, if you want to say he was a chief at 20, that would put him at about 60, because you just add the 40, 38 or 40 years or so, and you get 60. But likely he was very close in age to Caleb, and so that's how we get probably about 80 years old. So at this time, Joshua is somewhere between 60 and 80. I would pull closer towards 80. Just to give an idea of his age. I think sometimes we read Joshua and we think of him being a spry young fellow, and he was getting up there. So he definitely had a lot of years behind him and that to assist him. So open to Joshua chapter 1. And Joshua is going to the book of Joshua. This is going to fulfill the land promise. That's why I call it the occupation and rest. Because this is later on, the writer of Joshua is going to talk about how the promise given to Abraham was fulfilled. It was finished here in Joshua concerning the land. And if you're curious, we don't know exactly who authored Joshua. You know, the prior five books, absolutely Moses, possibly someone else at the last few chapters. Some think Joshua may have written it. Some think Samuel may have written it. But just like we see with how Genesis through Deuteronomy were written for those going into the land, when you read Joshua and you put it in its historical context to later on, it seems that Joshua was written as a reminder to those after they're in the land and after they've been there for a bit. Just kind of pulls everything together. But we'll begin chapter 1. Verse 1 says, "Now after the death of Moses, the servant of the Lord, came to pass that the Lord spake unto Joshua, the son of Nun, Moses' minister, saying, Moses, my servant, is dead. Now therefore arise, go over this Jordan, thou and all this people, unto the land which I do give to them, even to the children of Israel. Every place that the sole of your foot shall tread upon, that have I given unto you, as I said unto Moses. From the wilderness and this Lebanon, even unto the great river, the river Euphrates, all the land of the Hittites, unto the great sea towards the going down of the sun, shall be your coast. There shall not any man be able to stand before thee all the days of thy life, as I was with Moses, so I will be with thee. I will not fail thee, nor forsake thee. Be strong and of a good courage. For unto this people shalt thou divide for an inheritance the land which I swear unto their fathers to give them. Only be thou strong and very courageous, that thou mayest observe to do according to all the law which Moses my servant commanded thee. Turn not from it to the right hand or to the left, that thou mayest prosper whithersoever thou goest. This book of the law shall not depart out of thy mouth, but thou shalt meditate therein day and night, that thou mayest observe to do according to all that is written therein. And then thou shalt make thy way prosperous, and then thou shalt have good success. Have not I commanded thee? Be strong and of a good courage. Be not afraid, neither be thou dismayed, for the Lord thy God is with thee whithersoever thou goest. So Moses has died, and if you remember, just before Moses died, God is talking to Moses, and Joshua is there, and God tells Moses, after you die, it's all downhill. So God here encourages Joshua. It's not all downhill yet. Yes, eventually they will turn from me, and I will punish them for that. But Joshua, don't worry about it. Be strong. Be of a good courage. All the land that I promised, you're going to take it. You have nothing to worry about. So God encourages Joshua here as the new figurehead or leader of Israel that, yes, what he has said is going to come to pass. Don't be dismayed. Be strong. Be of a good courage. And follow the law properly. Now he says there in verse 8, the book of the law shall not depart out of thy mouth, but thou shalt meditate therein day and night, that you can observe to do according to all those things, and then you'll have good success. Well, y'all have already told me that the law is Genesis through Deuteronomy, so you could read this, and you could say, this book, or these books of Genesis through Deuteronomy, shall not depart out of your mouth. You shall have remembrance of them. And here's where we see, this is where we see this in action. This is where we get those memory tools from the first five books and see them being applied as a whole. Because if you're Joshua, or even if you're Israel at the time, and you're about to go take the land, well, Genesis is going to remind you that when God makes a promise, he keeps the promise. That's what that's going to remind you of. And you're going to think back, you're going to keep those words in your mind, in your memory, you're going to repeat them, and you say, yes, God, every time he made a promise to my fathers, he kept that promise. Now, some promises were far off that haven't been fulfilled yet, but I know he's going to fulfill them, and here now, this day, in this generation, he's actually going to fulfill one of them. That's exciting. Mm-hmm. That's so encouraging to know that you are going to see some of those promises. One of the great promises made there in Genesis 12 to Abram come to pass, the land promise. Well, Exodus would remind them that they need to remain faithful and have proper faith in order to be delivered, in order for God to take care of them and to protect them and to preserve them. They can look back to the generation prior that came out of Egypt, and they still see God's promises, because he promised to deliver them from Egypt. But then they see the fact that we've got to remain faithful and do the best we can to obey God. And he's going to deliver this land into our hands, just like he delivered our fathers out of Egypt. And some of those very ones out of Egypt. Now, Leviticus would remind them that in all this, to be holy. That goes along with being faithful, but to make sure that you are being holy, being a separate, a sanctified nation, being different from the nations around you that you are going to be in the midst of, that you're not like them, and you're going to overtake them. Numbers would remind them that they are completely and totally prepared. That there's no moment during this where they can say, wait a minute, God, hold on. We're missing something here before we go in. No, God says, go. And you go. And if there's something along the way that you do need, he'll provide. He'll take care of it along the way. But you just trust in him, because he will prepare you. And they would remember that their fathers didn't go into the land they're about to take. And I think that would discourage them from being discouraged and encourage them to be encouraged, because they knew what happened. They lived in the wilderness. And then, of course, Deuteronomy, repeating what he says here to Joshua, keep these things in remembrance. I mean, he says to Joshua, you know, meditate on these day and night so you can observe them. And that fifth book of the law is all about repetition and meditation so that you can observe those things. And so you can see how those five books were written specifically for this generation to keep them faithful, to encourage them, to know that they can trust God, to know that He's going to give them the land so that they can stand up boldly and go do what God has told them to do so that they can be strong and absolutely of a good courage. So God encourages Joshua, and part of that encouragement is, go read the law, Joshua. Memorize the law. Know the law, because that will keep you faithful. That will keep you persistent. That will keep you holy. That will get you where you need to and where you want to go and where I want you to be. And in verse 10 it says, "Then Joshua commanded the officers of the people, saying, pass through the host and command the people, saying, prepare you victuals, for within 3 days you shall pass over this Jordan to go in to possess the land which the Lord your God giveth you to possess it." So he goes to and he says, all right, let's get ready. In 3 days it's going to happen. In 3 days we're going to see this promise begin to be fulfilled. This is what's going on. And we won't read it, but in 12 through the rest of the chapter, then he goes to the 2.5 tribes over on the east side. Mm-hmm. Remember, those are the ones that said, we want the land we've basically already taken. God hasn't promised us this, but we want this. And God said, okay, you can have it, but you've got to go over Jordan with your brethren and fight for them. Mm-hmm. Leave the women and children and those who can't fight. And you're coming back only once you're done with that, which is about 5 to 7 years that they were completely gone from their family. They were willing to do this so they could get the land that they wanted. Now, Joshua reminds them of this, and what's amazing to me is how they respond. They say, yes, we'll do this. In verse 18, it says, whosoever he be, and this is the tribe speaking back to Joshua, whosoever he be that doth rebel against thy commandment and will not hearken unto thy words in all that thou commandest him, he shall be put to death. Only be strong and have a good courage. So Joshua says, make sure you remember the promise. And they respond and say, we'll do it. And Joshua, make sure you be strong and have a good courage. I mean, they're completely and totally behind Joshua as their leader. They say, Joshua, yes, and we want everyone to follow the commandments. And in this, we start to see in Joshua that by and large, they get it right. What we're going to see in Joshua over the next couple of weeks is that by and large, they obey God. Now, there are little portions here or there where they don't, and there are some things that happen. But for the most part, they follow through, and they really do desire what God wants. And they don't turn away from it like their fathers did. And like a lot of the people that we saw in Exodus through Deuteronomy, those kind of things happen. So it's different. They're encouraged. They want this. After waiting for so long, they want it. Well, Joshua is going to send some spies into the land. Sounds familiar, doesn't it? When Moses sent the spies into the land, only Joshua is going to send two. It says in chapter 2, verse 1, and Joshua, the son of Nun, sent out of Shittim two men to spy secretly, saying, go view the land, even Jericho, or especially Jericho. And they went and came into a harlot's house named Rahab and lodged there. So instead of one for each tribe, he just sends out two. Just sends out two. Now, that I think that does show Joshua's faith in these men. Mm-hmm. For themselves to remain strong and have a good courage. You know, if you send more, they will be bolstered. They will feel protected. But he just sends two. Now, of course, the difference is Moses sent the other spies to go see the entirety of the land. They're gone for some 40 days, where Joshua sends them, and these men are only gone for about 3 days, because Jericho is right over the Jordan. So they go over, and the king of Jericho finds out they're there, finds out they're with Rahab. King sends to Rahab, says, let the men go. She says, well, they already left, which wasn't true, but she hides them. And so the men of the king that were going after them, they ran out of the city trying to chase them, thinking they're gone. And Rahab then asks the men that when Israel comes into the land, that her and her house will be saved. In verse 9 and following, it says, and she said unto the men,
I know that the Lord hath given you the land, and that your terror is fallen upon us, and that all the inhabitants of the land faint because of you. For we have heard how the Lord dried up the water of the Red Sea for you when ye came out of Egypt, and what ye did unto the two kings of the Amorites that were on the other side Jordan, Sihon and Og, whom ye utterly destroyed. And as soon as we had heard these things, our hearts did melt. Neither did there remain any more courage in any man because of you, for the Lord your God, he is God of heaven above and in earth beneath. Now therefore I pray you, swear unto me by the Lord, since I have showed you kindness, that ye will also show kindness unto my father's house, and give me a true token, and that ye will save alive my father and my mother and my brethren and my sisters and all that they have, and deliver our lives from death. Well, she starts off and she says, we know about you. We know what you've done. We know what the God of heaven has done. So it wasn't that Israel went into the land and these people were completely ignorant of who God was or the things that God had done. As a matter of fact, because of the great works that God had done, they were very familiar with who the God of heaven was. And Rahab, unlike the king, says, I want that. I want to follow him. I want to be saved by him. I want to show obedience to him. I fear him. The people all fear him. But, of course, the people, like the king, were against him. They feared him, and they wanted to fight against God. But that's not what Rahab wanted. But we see here that the people around about, they knew who God was, and they had a fear of God. They knew who was coming. They knew the power that this nation had, and they knew why they had that power, and that's because of God. Well, the spies agree. And the spies say, well, that'll work. That will work. And she lets them down out of her household because it was in part of the wall of Jericho. And the spies instruct Rahab on what to do when they come so they'll know which place to save. She agrees, and she tells them, go hide in the country for 3 days. And you hide in the country for 3 days, and then you can leave, and then they won't find you. Well, they do this. So they hide in the country for 3 days. And wouldn't you know it, they bring back a good report. It says in verse 23, so the two men returned and descended from the mountain and passed over and came to Joshua the son of Nun and told him all things that befell them. And they said unto Joshua, truly the Lord hath delivered into our hands all the land, for even all the inhabitants of the country do faint because of us. This is a stark contrast to 38 years prior, when 12 spies go into the land, and they're there for 40 days, and they come back and they say, Moses, we can't do it. There's nothing we can do. There's giants in the land. We can't do this. The interesting thing is that we're never told that those 12 spies had a problem when they were in the land. They go in the land, they come back. These two men almost lost their lives, and they say, Joshua, we can do this. That is a great contrast to see the faith and the belief that these people had. They knew that this could happen. Total and opposite. It's just the opposite of that generation that had to wander in the wilderness. Because nothing bad happened to those spies that were told of, and yet here, these fellows ran into some trouble. They had to hide, and they still said, Joshua, we can do it. God can do it for us. Well, that's chapter 1 and chapter 2. So God encourages Joshua. Joshua tells him, hey, get ready. 3 days, we're going over. And Joshua reminds the 2.5 tribes of their promise. And Joshua sends out the spies. And it seems that chapter 2 probably takes place basically during part of chapter 1. Because he says in 3 days we're going over, and then they hide for 3 days. So it seems that he sent the spies out, and then he goes and tells everyone, hey, in 3 days we're going over. Because then they come back in 3 days. And some would say possibly not. I think it kind of lines up better that way, since he does say we're going over 3 days. But in chapter 3, we have preparation continues
for the crossing, and instruction is given. It says in verse 7, "And the Lord said unto Joshua, This day will I begin to magnify thee in the sight of all Israel, that they may know that as I was with Moses, I will be with thee." So he encourages Joshua again, and he says, "Don't worry, Joshua. They're going to look at you like they looked at Moses. They looked to Moses because he was a beacon of the miracles that I gave, and I'm going to do the same. I'm going to magnify you. They're going to revere you. So don't worry. They're going to want to follow you even more, and they're going to respect you in that manner." Well, excuse me. We get on to verse 14. It says, "It came to pass, when the people removed from their tents to pass over Jordan, and the priests bearing the Ark of the Covenant before the people," see, they're told, follow the priests who have the Ark, "and as they that bear the Ark were come unto Jordan, and the feet of the priests that bear the Ark were dipped in the brim of the water, for the Jordan overfloweth all his banks all the time of harvest, that the waters which came down from above stood and rose up upon a heap very far from the city Adam, that is beside Zaratan, and those that came down toward the sea of the plain, even the salt sea, failed and were cut off, and the people passed over right against Jericho. And the priests that bear the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord stood firm on dry ground in the midst of Jordan, and all the Israelites passed over on dry ground until all the people were passed clean over Jordan." Sounds familiar again, doesn't it? They passed through the Red Sea on dry ground. That was with Moses. And this is how God is magnifying Joshua, and he's going to make that statement in the next chapter. So the idea, what happens is the priests go in front of the people with the ark, and the people have to keep a certain distance, but they follow. The priests get in the middle of Jordan, and all the people pass over. And then, of course, the priests come out, the water goes back, but they had passed over on dry ground. Very, very similar in many ways to the crossing of the Red Sea. But chapter 4, sort of like chapter 2 to some extent, chapter 4 doesn't necessarily completely take place after chapter 3. Chapter 4 is going to give us some specific details of some things that happened in chapter 3. Because last verse there, it says, all Israel passed over. But then chapter 4, we're going to get a discussion of some things that happened while they were passing over. And they're told to take and build a memorial, two memorials specifically. We go to verse 8, and it says, "And the children of Israel did so as Joshua commanded, and took up 12 stones out of the midst of Jordan, as the Lord spake unto Joshua, according to the number of tribes of the children of Israel, and carried them over with them unto the place where they lodged, and laid them down there." So they're told, in the Jordan, where the priests are standing, take 12 stones from the riverbed there. Take 12 stones and carry them over to where you're setting up camp across Jordan. You're going to build this up as a memorial. But then it says in verse 9, "And Joshua set up 12 stones in the midst of Jordan, in the place where the feet of the priests, which bear the Ark of the Covenant, stood. And they are there unto this day." So they had stood for quite some time. Whenever the book of Joshua was written, they were still standing on that day. So they set up these two memorials, and just to show the magnification of Joshua, it says here in verse 14, "On that day the Lord magnified Joshua in the sight of all Israel, and they feared him as they feared Moses all the days of his life." So God just wanted to make sure that they were following Joshua the way they should be. And in case they said, "Well, Moses brought us through the sea, Joshua, what have you done?" God says, "Okay, here, I'm going to do something amazing by Joshua's hand with him leading you, so that you see him as the leader that you should, and know that I am completely and totally behind him." And also tells us in verse 19, it says, "The people came up out of the Jordan on the 10th day of the first month and encamped in Gilgal in the east border of Jericho." So it's only been a month and 10 days since Moses died. It's the first day, the 10th day of the first month And that's when they come up. So it's the 41st year. It's been 40 full years now. As a matter of fact, almost to the day, it's almost 40 years to the day when they came out of Egypt. They came out of Egypt on the 15th day of the first month. And so this is the 10th day of the first month that they do this. And now God's going to give us a further explanation of those stones of remembrance. So this is verse 20. And these 12 stones, which they took out of Jordan, did Joshua pitch in Gilgal. And he spake unto the children of Israel, saying, when your children shall ask their fathers in time to come, saying, what mean these stones? Then ye shall let your children know, saying, Israel came over this Jordan on dry land. For the Lord your God dried up the waters of Jordan from before you until ye were passed over, as the Lord your God did to the Red Sea, which he dried up from before us until we were gone over, that all the people of the earth might know the hand of the Lord, that it is mighty, that ye might fear the Lord your God forever. So when coming generations saw the 12 stones built up in Gilgal, they say, what are these for? They say, those 12 stones came from the riverbed of Jordan when it was dry. And they turn and they see the 12 stones built up in the midst of Jordan, and they say, those 12 stones came from the side of the river, and they were put there when the riverbed was dry, because God parted it and he brought us through, so that they might firmly believe that these things happened. It was an evidence that these things occurred, to give them faith, to get them to fear God and to revere him the way they ought to, and to remind them how they came into the land, what God did to get them there. Oh, God could have brought them around and they wouldn't have had to go through the sea. But this is the way God chose to do it, to magnify himself and to put them in remembrance. So in chapter 1, God encourages Joshua. Joshua says, we're going over in 3 days. Joshua reminds 2.5 tribes of what's going on, and they're completely behind him. In chapter 2, we see that Joshua, in the meantime, had sent 2 spies out. They bring back a good report. They say, hey, we can do this. In chapter 3 and 4, we get the recording of the crossing. We get some details concerning it, and we're told about these memorial stones. We're given the exact day of the month and which month it was that they came over. And in chapter 5, sort of a few things happen here in chapter 5. But we start in verse 1, just to again see how the nations around thought. It said, and it came to pass, when all the kings of the Amorites, which were on the side of Jordan westward, and all the kings of the Canaanites, which were by the sea, heard that the Lord had dried up the waters of Jordan from before the children of Israel, until we were passed over, that their heart melted, neither was their spirit in them any more, because of the children of Israel. So again, you know, you part the sea wide enough to bring all these warriors over to take the land, people are going to notice. They're going to see what's happening. But before they go take the land, before they battle Jericho, we're going to look at them taking Jericho next week, because before that happens, some things have to be tidied up here. First of all, the new generation had never been circumcised. The men. Now, that was part of the covenant. When you were born, the 8th day, you are circumcised. That is absolutely part of the covenant. Well, verse 5 says, now all the people that came out were circumcised, but all the people that were born in the wilderness by the way, as they came forth out of Egypt, them they had not circumcised. Go down to verse 8, it says, and it came to pass, when they had done circumcising all the people, that they abode in their places in the camp till they were whole, or that is, till they were healed up. And the Lord said unto Joshua, this day have I rolled away the reproach of Egypt from off you, wherefore the name of this place is called Gilgal unto this day. And Gilgal means rolling or rolled away. This shows a couple things, but this shows their dedication to the Lord, because obviously, as an adult, that's going to be a much more painful thing to go through and to be healed up than as a baby. So they're willing to go through this. That shows their dedication. It also shows how much trust they had, because now they're
in the land where these kings and these nations want to destroy them. They're in the land, and then they do this. But they're utterly helpless until they heal. And they trusted God enough to do this and to lay about healing for several days and know that God would not allow the enemies to come in and attack them during this time. We see an amazing trust and dedication here, and that leads to their obedience. And the same thing's going to happen. Verse 10 says, "And the children of Israel encamped in Gilgal and kept the Passover on the 14th day of the month at even in the plains of Jericho." So they keep the Passover the way they were supposed to. They're in the land. They're in the midst of their enemies. The people in the land know that it seems they have an idea that they're there to destroy them. They fear them, and yet Israel says, okay, we're going to keep the circumcision, and we're going to keep the Passover. You know how open to attacks they would have been at that time? They're all healing. The men are all healing from being circumcised, and then they're all making sacrifices. They're eating of the bread. They're doing all the things that they have to do for the Passover. Again, it shows the same exact thing that the previous thing did. It shows their dedication and their trust in God. He's going to deliver them. He's going to preserve and protect them. They don't have to worry about it. And then in verse today. And then in verses 11 and 12, the manna ceases. Remember, God was feeding them with that miraculous substance for the whole time that they were pretty much in the wilderness. And because now they're over Jordan, they're in the land, now it ceases. Now they have to eat off of the land. Verses 13 through 15, end of the chapter here. Something kind of curious happens with Joshua. It says, "And it came to pass when Joshua was by Jericho, that he lifted up his eyes and looked, and behold, there stood a man over against him with his sword drawn in his hand. And Joshua went unto him and said unto him, Art thou for us or for our adversaries? And he said," that is the man with the sword, "nay," or that is no. He said, "Are you for us or against us?" And he says, "No." Well, that doesn't, it doesn't seem you can answer that question with that answer. Are you for me or against me? And someone goes, "No." Well, no, you're either one or the other. Well, but here's why. He says, "But as captain of the host of the Lord am I now come." Joshua fell on his face to the earth and did worship and said unto him, "What saith my Lord unto his servant?" And the captain of the Lord's host said unto Joshua, "Loose thy shoe from off thy foot, for the place whereon thou standest is holy." Joshua did so. Now, first of all, we have to realize that we don't know who, but this is definitely one of the Godhead. Because Joshua falls down and worships him, and he accepts the worship and says, "The place you stand is holy." And whenever someone throughout the Bible goes to fall down and worship an angel, they say, "Don't do that." So this is one in the Godhead. Some say it's Jesus. We're not told specifically. Either way, this is God come down in the front of Joshua. And Joshua thinks it's some man. And he says, "Are you for us or are you against us?" And he says, "No." Now here's why he says no. Because, now of course he didn't, it seems, at first realize who he was talking to, but then when he did, he responded accordingly. But the reason that God answers no is because they are for God or against God. In other words, Joshua can't come to him and say, "I'm the leader of this army, God. Are you for my army or against us? Are you fighting with us?" No, no, no. The army of Israel, they were for God. It was by God that they were doing these things. And so God comes along, and this is all we're given of this instance. We're not given any more detail here. And there's an aspect where I'm convinced that it's one to remind Joshua of his place. That Israel's not doing these things because of who Joshua is, but because of who God is, and because Joshua's following God and leading them appropriately. And that they are for God. That God is the one leading them about. And that God will deliver them. So before their first battle in the land, God comes down in the midst of Joshua
and encourages him, essentially face to face, that you can do this, but you have to remember who you are and where you are, and that you do things the way I've asked you to do, and you'll take these things in battle. So Joshua 1 through 5 is the preparation for the entering of the land. We have these great encouragements. We see the great attitude and the completely different attitude than their fathers had in Numbers. And they're ready and they want it and they're encouraged and they know that God can give it to them. So much so that they trust God enough that when they're in the land, they go through a very painful medical procedure in that day, I'm sure. And they also keep the Passover. They know God's going to protect them and he's going to preserve them when they go in to occupy the land, and that he's going to give them rest. That's the first section of Joshua. Preparation, the encouragement, and the fact that they know that they can do it. And then the next section, we will see the battles and we will see the rest. But you know what we see here? Is a reflection. If you remember back, you think about Israel, you think about how it relates to the gospel, how it relates to us. Got to trust God today. Got to be encouraged to do things His way today. And it's God's way or no way, and God will give us rest if we obey Him and if we do things the way that He has asked us to do. So have you begun to follow the Lord in these ways and be encouraged and know that He will give you that spiritual rest? If you haven't, we ask why not. And if you have, and you've stumbled about, and maybe you became like those in Numbers instead of like those in Joshua, you know, God is there all the time, and He's there for you. You have to reach out to Him. And we're here for you this day, that if we can assist you in any way concerning these things, we'll do whatever we can to help you in a spiritual way. If there's anything that you need, because we love one another so much. So if there's anything we can do for you, would you come forward as we stand and sing?